Hello and welcome to the Linux Lads Christmas special. As usual, we're joined by Mike and Connor. Say hello, chaps.
Hi.
Hello.
And as per the annual tradition, now third time we've done this, I believe, I'm joined by Mike.
That guy.
as per the annual tradition, we're also joined by the lads from Binary Times, Mark and Wayne.
Hi there.
Hey, guys.
So, yeah, it's great to do this. Third time we've done this, is it?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think so.
It's my highlight. It's my highlight of the year.
It's what keeps us relevant as a podcast.
Sad but true.
they came out of retirement just for us. We're very touched. I am also joined by a lovely pint of Guinness. It's from a can, but nobody else is drinking, so now I feel like the lush of the podcast.
I do have a couple of cans in the fridge for my dinner, but yeah.
You're having cans for your dinner?
Yeah.
If it helps, I've been demolding the apartment, so I'm a bit high on fumes. I don't know what I put on those bottles, man, but good stuff.
So for this episode, we're just going to have basically a retrospective of 2021, our individual Linux journeys throughout the year. We have our show notes that we all contribute to ahead of the show, and there's just a bloody laundry list of stuff in there. So we'll try and keep it in the overarching theme of 2021.
That's the problem of opening up the show notes a month before starting the show.
I'll actually pose a question to all four of you. What do you think was the biggest Linux moment of this year? Like the biggest headline news thing that happened in FOSS or Linux or whatever like that?
Potentially, even though it hasn't been launched yet, for me it is the potential of the Steam Deck. No, for me, yeah, there was the Steam Deck. Really, is because it's getting more developers involved. Potentially, I mean, if you sell a massive fuck ton of units, then game studios are going to go, hold on, this is a market that we can't exactly ignore. So we have to have developer resources in that direction, and it's running Linux by default. Some people may wipe it and put Windows on it, which is entirely supported. There's nothing necessarily wrong with that, but it's good that it's running Linux by default. So that means that there'll be development hours and development resources sent in Linux direction, regardless of whether you're a gamer or not. It will benefit the community as a whole, because there'll be drivers for the hardware components inside it, more developer hours in the graphics development stack, graphics, audio, Bluetooth, all of that stuff for this device. So it's the whole community could benefit from more development hours in that direction. So that's the way I see that as one of the biggest ones of this year, even though it hasn't been launched yet, probably won't be launched till next year. But it's been announced and is currently being worked upon this year, so I'm counting it.
I did actually punt for one, so I got an email there a week or two ago to say that it was to be delayed until February of 2022. You know, but I agree with you, Connor. I think like it's going to have huge potential for Linux, because of the amount of development. Now, I think it's using some kind of Atomic Arch setup or something.
It's running Arch with KDE desktop environment, and it's a immutable file system.
Yeah.
That's the way it's being set up.
Yeah. So, and that seems to be the way this a lot of. It's just the new kind of the new groovy, isn't it? You know, like you've got Fedora doing their Silverblue and OpenSUSE doing their thing, and Endless OS as well.
Yeah, that's for me. Personally, this is the year when I finally am able to work fully on Wayland and have my computer running an immutable distro for Fedora Silverblue, and it works fine with some limitations. And I think we will look at this year, maybe in a few years, we'll look back at this year and see, okay, this is the year when things change a little, because I think this is the year when Ubuntu kind of moves away from maybe GTK towards Flutter. This is the year when other distributions are starting to be a bit looking for other options rather than maybe using GNOME. This year signifies further and further further improvement to KDE Plasma. And whilst GNOME also had a massive change that just, if anybody was unsure that the developers of GNOME have a vision, this year would have proven them wrong. And I'm not saying in a derogatory way. I'm glad that there is a desktop for me, but it's not the desktop for everybody. And maybe this is the year when distribution, which eventually will end up in many distributions having other desktop environments, maybe KDE, maybe it's going to be something else. This is the year when RPM OS 3 and other technologies that maybe, I don't know if that's going to be used in the Steam Deck, but technologies that are used in immutable desktops also kind of matured, Wayland matured. So I think maybe this is the break year between Linux of the old and whatever the Linux of the new is going to be. So immutable base, containerized applications like Flatpak or Snaps, other newer desktop technologies than Wayland plus maybe Flutter plus something maybe else than GTK and Qt. Remember, this year was also a year when the Qt company again went a bit harder on the whole licensing thing. So we might be seeing beginnings of a wave that will change a lot of things that will be apparent over the next few years.
And even if the majority go in that direction, it doesn't mean that the old Linux, as you're calling it, is going to be left behind. We will still benefit of it, even if we become the minority.
But will we, though? Like, if there's no one left developing for that?
Oh, there's always going to be Debian XFCE.
My point was, we still benefit of it. I mean, your Debian XFCE can still run Snaps and Flatpak, so we'd still benefit from that point of view. And as Linux becomes popular, as I was alluded to earlier, then more development resources will go into the audio stack, be it PulseWire PipeWire. That has a lot of potential, and you see more and more distros are choosing that as the default now. Graphics stack, all of that. Essentially, the more Linux becomes popular, the more eyes and development time gets put into it, and that will benefit everyone, regardless of whether you're a GNOME, KDE, immutable, not immutable. You have a hardline stance against System D, and you're somebody who runs Dev1, You'll still get the benefit. It'll all trickle down. So it's not removing choices from people just because a certain aspect of the Linux desktop gets more popular and gets more attention and more development time. It'll still be passed on. I mean,
yeah, so I agree with what Connor said. It's Linux always, because of its how open it is, there's always going to be people who say, no, I don't want containerized applications. I don't want the developers to have this kind of power over my desktop. I like what the distros do for me. Thank you very much. And I'm just going to stick with what's in the official repos. And that's a fairly valid choice. It's not going away. There's just going to be, I think this is also the time where more people are coming in. So this whole effort to have a immutable distro with containerized applications that maybe give the developers a bit more choice, I think that's there to attract more developers so that they can attract more people.
I'll just say something on that, and I suppose I'll kind of use another triggering kind of phrase or word. But I think it almost comes down to me as the same argument as, either vaccinating or not vaccinating. If you're going to have an internet facing device, then you really, you know, you have to go down this immutable file system, atomic updates and containerization, and you no longer have control of your shit, because you need the developers making sure that it's secure, because if it's not, it's on the internet and it's going to be fucking up everyone else's day.
No, so you can choose. So distributions are not going away, right? They are still going to be here, and immutable or mutable, you're still trusting the distribution maintainers with the set of packages
provide. For, right? I mean, you know.
So yeah, so you can choose to have an immutable file system distro, like. So the difference would be, like, you're going to have a Debian without any flatpaks or snaps, for example, because you don't like them. You might have Debian with your normal set of packages, only using what's in the repos. And I don't see you being in that choice any more dangerous to the rest of the internet than somebody who's running Fedora, Silverblue, and everything bad that happens to them because of their poor choice of applications happens only in their home folder. I think this is not, it's not like the option of having a mutable distro is becoming less safe. It's where you put the onus of the safety or whatever, you know.
Yeah, but like if you're there and you're saying, okay, I want to run Debian stable, and never update because it works for me and all the rest of it, and then that's sitting out on the internet somewhere, you know, and you know the next thing is taken over, and you know it's doing bad stuff to other people.
Well, if you don't patch your update, then yeah, that's a different story. You should, and you know, that's part and parcel of being a responsible administrator or user. You need to keep it updated. But if we are going to point fingers at people who don't update, let's have a look at Windows users.
The fact that Windows XP still has a higher feckin' share.
XP has higher share than Linux.
And, like, you know, you get most people probably on Windows 10. Nobody's running Windows Vista, I don't know why. But Windows 7 is popular and it's out of support, if I understand it correctly, unless you're paying Microsoft a lot of money, which most people who run it don't. So, yeah, I mean, it is. I can't think of any reason. Anyway, sorry.
But I think we can safely assume that anyone who is running Windows of any flavor is not a responsible bloody computer user.
Well, that's a whole other kettle of fish there, Mark.
Let's not be too prejudiced. You know, I know some of my best friends.
Yeah, some of my best friends are Windows users.
Run Windows responsibly. You know, yes, it should come with a warning label. That's true. And yeah. But no, all right. We take a Mickey, but they do have. They do have a reasonable update strategy right now. It's just shut it down for everybody and update forcefully, because
yeah, the reasonable update strategy is, oh, I see you're in the middle of watching a movie.
Yes, let me restart it for you. All right. Well, tell me this. If you know that 90, or maybe if you know that 50% of your users will never update of their own, will never basically say, will never agree to update, and they will never willingly do that, and you know that that's making them extremely dangerous, and you know that you are going to have to pay for the support because you have to support these people, what are you going to do? I don't know how Android fixes it somehow. I think people update Android.
Do they though? Do they? I mean, How many times do I have to say, people, oh, have you updated the Teams app? Because I work in a kind of a support role. I'm not proud of it. It's just a thing. But they don't. Like, there's... Yeah, you know, I can't help. it's like, so people do have these Android devices. Do they go into the App Store? And, you know, if you look at the list of updates, you can set Android to auto update and it'll update away in the background. And if you do that, great. But I'm looking at lots of outdated apps and even outdated OSs. And it's interesting because you brought up a point there of the responsibility of the user. And Mark and I were almost at loggerheads a week ago about this because we spoke about, Mark posted on our chat about there are 300,000 MikroTik routers out there that need the update that are you know, in a really bad place and where they are on the internet and stuff. And my argument is it's down to the user. You know, if you're going to run this gear, for me, I'm only talking for myself here, it's down to you to upgrade your equipment. And I don't know, I suppose what's different, it was interesting, the entire conversation. I sat silent for a long time there and listened to what you had to say. And when I hear you talk about like containerization and all that stuff and in the apps and how you want each user to, whether they want a very recent experience or whether they want to hang back and sit in the Debian stable experience, I mean, we're talking about semi-technical things here. We're not talking about really new users to Linux when we're talking about these scenarios, because we're people who've been involved in Linux for quite a long time, and we know what choices to make to bring on these benefits to ourselves. Now, I'm just throwing the new user in there into the mix just because. And one more thing I will say is one thing that worries me about the adoption when you talk about the Steam Deck there and everything. I know I've jumped about five topics here, but that's how I roll. And when you talk about the Steam Deck there and everything and about, you know, making more drivers available, more, you know, sort of increasing the reach of Linux to all users, to all hardware, as much hardware as possible. There's one thing that worries me, and I never hear anyone speak about it, and it's the Linux kernel becoming a 30 gig install.
Because that's never going to happen.
That's because a lot of drivers never make it into it. A lot of Android devices have got their own, and that's bad, by the way. I think it's bad. Every stupid MediaTek processor needs its own out of three kernel with whatever proprietary binary stupid shite that is, or whatever. I don't know how it actually works, but I know basically this is, it should, you know, and that's...
And apparently MediaTek is one of the worst ones.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, if I was running Vince, I...
Probably Samsung with their Exynos is probably fairly locked
down
as well.
Yeah, or the Kirin Huawei chipsets, or the Qualcomm chipsets, or the whatever Apple M1 that actually is probably the easier side to debug or to work for, because somebody's actually quite successfully they are trying. But it's the problem is that the stupid ARM platform is so fractured. Like that everything needs to have its own set of drivers that are not available to everybody else. Whereas here on good old x86, most things work. And the kernel, what is the kernel now? How big is the kernel now?
It's still megabytes, isn't it? It's not gigabytes in any stretch of the imagination.
The whole distro fits on a 20 gig install and maybe even less, right? I've never actually had
this. Yeah. I mean, I mentioned the kernel there. I guess I was more, you know, when you install Windows these days, you're looking at a 30 gig starting point. Linux, I don't know. What's Linux? What, 6 to 8, 10? I don't know.
The distribution, like.
Yeah, distribution, yeah.
Hmm. I mean, you could go off and install Bunsen Labs.
Or you could install Endless. Endless is 40 gigs now.
Yeah, Garuda is 30 and won't install, even though it doesn't need somebody on some other podcast they were running, I think it was one of Joe Resington's podcasts, they were trying and they couldn't get it installed under 30, even though it didn't need 30 gigs. But yeah, no, like nowhere near as Windows. I don't know why Windows is as big as it, I don't actually know. But it's, we won't see people like in this kind of inflation of the kernel just because we have other platforms being added, because the reason why every platform needs their own drivers is commercial. They don't want to share it. So that's why it's here. If everybody shared it, somebody clever would say, okay, guys, this is literally, there's cosmetic differences between all of these drivers. We can just make one and it should fucking work. Okay. At least that's how I imagine in my uninformed mind.
Yeah, and then we're getting into the whole shared libraries that aren't being maintained by anyone in particular, and the whole thing falls apart.
the two guys in Arizona, yeah, during this other week.
Yeah. Oh, God. But just before we move on, and when you think about, and I just want to go back to the microticks for a second. When you think about that, like, you've got some business, right? And some contractor was brought in 5 years ago to install some cool hardware to make everything work well. He puts in a microtick and he's gone, never seen again. And these people don't even know that microtick is in now in their system. You can't expect them to keep that updated.
Well, sorry. So if I was, for whatever reason, as a pacifist, buy myself a weapon and have a weapon expert install it and show me how it's done, and then I forget about it, and there's a loaded weapon in my sock drawer, and then one day I have I discover that that's a probably poor example, but I discover that I forgot how to operate it. That's on to me. Like, it's running on my watch. I'm responsible for the gear. It's on my premises, and I can take it. I'm the only one who can take it offline.
Fair point. Right?
And I have control over it. If it, to me, you are responsible for the things that you are running. Yeah, sorry. And so, yeah, I think that's it. It's the user, ultimately. And if the user, the fact that the user doesn't know what they don't know, it's a failure of the educational system or whatever. Or Microsoft, or people, you know, if people tell you, oh, this is easy, you don't have to do anything, then that's their problem. And if let's say iOS makes it look like that everything is super easy and super safe and everything's super private, and I'm not saying that they do, but they try, right? This is how they sell these things on It Just Works DM. Right?
Yeah, plug and play.
If they tell you, hi, Lily, if they tell you...
Really bad for audio... people, but Shane just showed us his cat.
Yeah. if somebody tells you this is super safe, do it, and then you don't update the bloody iPhone for 5 years, and then you get, and then it gets exploited. Yes, you can blame Apple for it, and you should, and there should be a recourse for people. Like, I've been told that I don't have to, that this is perfectly safe, and there should be a recourse to the authorities. But if none of that is in place, if I believe Microtech is not telling everybody, no, you don't have to update this thing.
I'm kind of with you, Mike. I'm with you. And because, I mean, if you were in a court system, what they'd say to you is ignorance is no excuse I had it in my head there and I lost it. Ignorance is no excuse to, you know, against the law. And if you're that's not the right saying, but it goes something like that. And for me, it's up to the user. You know, if you carry a phone, you update your phone. Nobody's going to come along and update your phones for you. I mean,
No, hang on. But Wayne, like... The thing that got me was, I mean, Microtech are blaming lazy users for not updating. But if you go on their website, a lot of their stuff, they're just saying plug and play. It's that simple, you know. So they are misleading people.
Yeah, but you can say that about anything, I believe. You know,
you can say that about everything.
Yeah. No. You cannot say Microsoft is misleading the people with updates. Microsoft is telling you, update this, and if you don't, it's your fault, right? If you keep pushing the tomorrow button every day, your fault. I'm sorry. If you use a tool and you don't and the tool is telling you that you need to do something and you choose against it and you don't educate yourself on it, man, I'm sorry. Like, what do you expect? It's like nobody would drive a car without learning. Well, okay, nobody with a brain inside would drive a car without learning how to do it first, and it's illegal to do so for a good reason.
But no, but I get where Mike's coming from in principle, and you are correct. I'm not saying I disagree with what you're saying, but if you're taking this scenario to say, I'm going to pick your example, it's not exactly that great for the one I'm about to talk to, but I'll still stick with your example. But let's say you're talking about driving lessons and it being able to operate a vehicle, but we're in a situation where the driving lessons are there, they're available, and it's people saying, yeah, in order to operate a vehicle, you should do this, or you have to do this. we're in a situation in this scenario where people are saying, yeah, and then continue to drive their car. Because that's effectively what they're doing. The pop-up is coming up and saying, please update your computer. You should update your computer. And they'll just say, I completely and utterly imagine a situation where they have no understanding of the pop-up that's coming up. They not only do they not read it, they say, go away, you're distracting me, go away. Yeah. It's whatever I'm going to do to make you stop putting this thing in front of me, I'm going to do, and just get rid of it as quickly as possible. And they barely even read the thing.
I did a horrible thing when I was in my early 20s. I was doing a night shift as a part-time security guard because I was studying and making, you know. And I was they set me in front of a computer that was monitoring the sprinklers and the fire suppression system. And I managed to put a CD-ROM with a game in there, and I used to play what was it, Total Air War or whatever it was called. You fly and you shoot at people, right? Great thing. So on that computer, that wasn't, and that should not have been possible, right? Because if there was a fire like on the third floor, 5 minutes away from me, I would not have heard it. But I was stupid. Yeah, I'm not saying I'm any smarter now, but
so there's a niche in the market. What you should do is like if there's a fire going on in real life, then like an icon should pop up in the game to alert you.
But computers and phones are commodities now. Everybody has one. Everybody, regardless of their skill level, regardless of how much they care about technology, which it seems to me about 80% couldn't give a crap. They just want to have the prettiest Instagram posts. And that's kind of what we're dealing with. It's like, it's people who have these devices that don't really care about the device, but it serves a kind of an intermediary purpose.
Not only is the expectation amongst the population, it's pure and utter peer expectation, particularly for young kids. You can imagine a hypothetical scenario: if you had an 11 or 12 year old kid, imagine telling that kid you're not allowed to have a smartphone.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that happens
because of the peer pressure of being able to interact with their friends.
I worry that it's all becoming very black box for the new generation. I don't know, to be honest. I don't know how many people are going into computer science as a career, but
not enough.
I do worry that maybe the next generation, probably not enough, but like the next generation, that's why you can get paid so much money for being a developer, because they're so rare. You have this generation who see it as a black box, you know, like dopamine comes out.
Maybe you guys in the West had like a real insight into what computers used to be, but for us they were
the other side of the Iron Curtain.
Well, I'm not that old. I was 7 years old when that fell. But you know, computers were so expensive that the school had some because somebody gave it to us, and then two of my classmates, and then eventually a few and fewer. But it wasn't something, and the education was so bad. Like, yeah, they taught you programming. This is how you make five star appear on the screen using Pascal, right? Then what else is computer? Microsoft Word, Microsoft Access, and Microsoft Excel. That's what computers are, and that's what it is, right? So for us, they were black boxes. This kind of a thing where you look at a machine. Like for me, a car is a fucking black box. I don't want to know what's in it. I'm not happy driving it either, but I have to sometimes, right? And I'm a qualified driver. I can do that. So
thanks for clarifying.
Yes, very good. In case anybody was wondering, full license, no points. What was I saying? Anyway, yeah. So the computer is supposed to be a black box for people, and it's only meant to. And from my point of view, people need to use some functionality that is only available in electronic form, but the applications and the whole operating system and the hardware needs to ensure safe operation, because you are literally giving people like me a car that they can't fix. I can't fix a car. I can't even replace the bloody tire if I wanted to. But there is for me as a safe recourse. There are things that I can do in order to operate a car safely, right? That has to become the same with computers. Or phones, because computers, like a personal computer, a PC, it's always going to be like this, hopefully. Us geeks and professionals and creators and people who like to think we need to have an outlet for it. We need to have the powerful machine. But everybody else, well, give them an Android phone or an iOS phone or a tablet, and they can do what they need to do safely.
I'm having too many thoughts. Sorry.
But I was just going to say that is potentially why Chrome OS is becoming so popular. And regardless of what you're, from a privacy point of view, whether you agree with it or not, but it's the whole thing of, you turn on the computer, you have access to a web browser, you have access to your through the web browser, you have access to the cloud suite, Google would, because they're making the Chromebook or the Chrome OS, they would like it all to be all the Google suite. But you could go to a web browser and you could do anything. You could be on the Microsoft suite, you could be on Nextcloud, you could be on anything because it's a web browser. But I mean, for those type of people where all they want to do is interact with a web browser, then they should have the barest minimum amount of operating system in order to facilitate that functionality.
And come here, with all this talk of driving licenses and everything, is ECDL still a thing? Or
oh, bloody hell, what was that like? My mom did that in the 90s, actually, I think. Yeah, or the early 2000s.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so ridiculous. It's learning how to use Microsoft Office.
No, it's the ECDL. It's a lot more than that.
And Internet Explorer.
well, Windows, we'll say.
It's the European Computer Driving License, Mike.
What?
Okay.
It's a load of shite.
Never heard of that.
having done the course, I can assure you it's a lot more than that. You are presented with Microsoft Windows because that is what the majority of the world runs on. But it does teach you about your File Explorer and the folder tree structure and the copy and paste functionality and everything like that could be applicable to a lot of Linux distributions as well.
I'm trying to make sense of everything that was just said, not just from you, Connor, but for the last while. And so we're using this car analogy a lot, and we have a lot of people who drive a car, and we're here sitting here talking as if we're the mechanics, basically. So we're the mechanics.
The car.
Yeah,
car.
We're
the local car enthusiasts. Yeah, we have the 1960s Corvettes. Whilst everybody else is driving a 2021 Mini.
But still, everybody can drive cars, and it's okay. It's not a problem as long as they've kind of passed this license or whatever thing and they have insurance. So,
Have you tried doing that recently? I've been fluid with my wife in Ireland. It's difficult. Passing driver test, like, I've done it in the Czech Republic. I've done it in the UK. Piece of cake. Yeah, I've done it twice. I didn't drive for 5 years, and I thought that and it's the other side of the road. Never mind, long story. But in Ireland, it's fucking difficult. At least in Dublin.
Difficult? I don't know about that now. Maybe nowadays, I don't know. I only passed my driving test just over a year ago.
Yeah,
and
so did Alisa.
It was difficult, but not excessively difficult. In fact, when I hear about what other people have to go through in other countries, specifically France, because my girlfriend's from there, in France, it's a lot of money and a lot of hours that you have to put in to get a driving license. And in Ireland, it's almost a bit too easy compared to other places. I thought, yeah, I know that's nothing to do with Linux, but
yeah, anyway, sorry, I jumped in there, Wayne.
That's okay. So we went to we kind of moved on to talking about computers in schools and this European computer driver license. I'd like to think that the Raspberry Pi Foundation are trying to address the computing in schools curriculum these days. I don't know what sort of reach they have in all the schools in the UK. I mean, I'm only talking about the UK just because I'm here. I don't know what sort of reach that I have, but when you go on their site and when you know they're providing free training for teachers and they're providing, you know, packs to schools and things like that. And from what I understand, there is a quite a bit of uptake on that. And that's nothing like what I would have done at school, you know, to have access to some of that kind of technology. Probably would have been quite exciting for me, because I'm actually even finding it exciting now-ish in a weird kind of grown-up kind of way. So back to the cars and the operating systems and, you know, OS X and all that kind of stuff, that kind of walled garden approach to computing, we're kind of saying that we don't want, Well, it's, I don't want Mark to be right, you see, that the people need to look after, that the people who create the technology need to be so on top of their game that the end user needs to do nothing. Now, that's what I feel Mark is kind of going for. However, if you take the walled garden of Apple and stuff where people don't have to, you know, do as much, and, you know, you buy into the whole Apple ecosystems and you sell your soul to them, and they'll do most of the crap for you, then fair enough. But for me, I need to make the decisions. I want to, maybe it is back to the car club thing, but I want to, and I don't know, if you're, there's far too many with people with smartphones who don't deserve one.
Well,
I have, and I'm a very happy iPhone user. It was I have a use of an iPhone. I didn't have to pay for it. That's why I'm so happy iPhone user. So, you know, because the amount they charge is extortionate. But I can tell you, I've recently switched from Android to iOS. To me, but then it comes down to your usage. Yeah? Do you want your phone, which to me is a device that is not as personal to me as my computer? The computer is outlet for my personality. Phone is always on me, but it's not something that I cherish. But and the reason why I have it, because it has good functionality that enables me to be, you know, anything from ordering to Nando's, you have to have a phone for it 2 days, or I don't know how it would work without one. Anything from that to basically just living, it's on phone. Otherwise, yeah, I don't know.
I'd just like to pick up on your last point, Mike. And I think I kind of really agree with what you're saying. And I suppose, just to keep with the car analogy and what Wayne was saying, I would kind of consider myself a two-car driver, you know, in that I like to have my Corvette for the weekends, for tinkering around with and everything and just having a bit of a laugh and doing serious stuff with it as well, like, you know, powering down the motorway at 10 million miles an hour. But I also like to have a reliable car that someone is going to take care of for me so that I can get backwards and forwards to work and everything. You know?
That is peak analogy right there. I love it.
Peak analogy. It's only going to get worse.
We'll leave it at that, so.
That's a great point. Like, yeah, it's like I was going to say earlier, Linux and FOSS in general is a spectrum. Like, you can find anything you want in there. Like, you can go from the seriously geeky text-only end of things all the way to the flashiest GUI animation kind of end of things. Like, that's the beauty of it. And, you know, we talked a lot about the Linus Tech Tips Challenge. And this is just to harken back to what we were talking about a little while ago. But, you know, people are very Marmite about that. Some people are like, you're fucking everything up, you're giving Linux a bad rap, and I fell into that a few times myself. But like, this is 2021 is the year where I'm properly seeing people taking notice of Linux as something like as a consumer or end user kind of thing. You know, it's not the preserve of geeks anymore, and that's starting to come to the fore a little bit more this year, I think. It's a long time coming, though, in fairness. Like, I mean, I've been a Linux user for, I'd say, over 10 years at this point, and a full-time user for maybe half that. But yeah, I've been aware of and used Linux for over a decade. And it's just lovely to see. Like, it's lovely to see all the benefits of it really coming to the fore this year. And people actually noticing it, and more major influencers and content creators and stuff actually taking notice and thinking maybe it's better than Windows in this regard, and we just didn't notice until now.
The way I see the crux of the setting, or the way that, I don't know if he expressly says this, but I this my guess as to the motivation for Linus Sebastian with that challenge is how to be bringing back to the Steam Deck. But my line of thinking is that he's saying, hold on, Valve are about to release this product, and they're making a very bold claim that this will run your Windows games. And him saying, how viable is this, considering that this is about to become very mainstream, as in there will be a device that people will be able to purchase that has this setup and claims that it'll be able to run your Windows games. How viable is this claim? And also, would mean he could have just quietly just had that thought to himself, but he went, No, I'm actually going to challenge this this thing and see how viable it is, see how well I can survive within it. And the point also is that this is the guy's probably has in the top 10, if top 5 of amount of subscribers on YouTube. He's massive on YouTube, and that is just an audience that he's just now putting Linux Truth's paces in front of. And there has been positive feedback in relation to it. I mean, that Pop OS thing that he encountered, that quickly got patched out, even if it wasn't anybody's fault, air quotes, they at least say, okay, well, maybe this is a use case scenario that we didn't anticipate, and maybe we should make that more clear. And there's other things. I think he said that his weird audio setup, piece of hardware that he has, that he's able to switch between things, and there's an open source script on YouTube, or not on GitHub, that download, and apparently just gets that device to work. And he said, but the setup instructions for that were not very user friendly. The guy who wrote the script went, you have a point, and actually subsequently put in, these are noob friendly instructions on how to do this.
Yes, I mean, to your one point, quietly thinking a thought to himself doesn't pay Linus Sebastian's bills. He needs to make a video out of it. But I know plenty of people, and I think you are absolutely right. Valve, yet again, stirred the waters, because they are the company in terms of PC gaming. But it will all be, like, if you want people to use Linux, like I drive my CityGo, then you will have to sell them a CityGo-shaped Linux, right? Rather than, you can't sell them a kit car, tell them, put this together yourself, or, you know what, even better, go to your local, what do you call those places where they smash cars? Go there and put a car together yourself. It will work. Don't worry. Here are the instructions. No. A person is going to have to buy a pre-installed Linux, and I think we've fleshed this out on our chat. If you want people to be happy with Linux, and they are not technical, or they can be technical, but they just don't want to mess with it, they're just gonna have to get it packaged. Right? Or they go to your mainstream, or any, they go to your company that sells these things, order it, it will come, they open it, and they start working. You know, they might have to learn stuff about it. You still have to be able to find your way through a different GUI, and you need to know how to run install applications, everything. But you should, if somebody tells you you can play this game on this, you shouldn't blue screen it. That's it, basically. And that will have to come with support, and support you need commercial institutions. Somebody has to make money somewhere. I would like to say one thing. There's a lot of ire thrown at Linux, the Linux community, that the Linux community has to do something, or the Linux community has
yeah,
to.
That's,
no,
that
we are a
too,
bunch
yeah.
of people doing a lot of stuff for free. And if you want commercial support for people who don't like to mess with computers, commercial grade support, you're gonna have to pay commercial grade money for it. That means somewhere there has to be money exchanged in that circle. Like Connor or Wayne, you know how hard support is. I think Shane, you also did a few years on supporting, right?
Quite a few years.
You know
yeah.
how hard it is to support people who don't like computers, right? So imagine doing. Would you do this for free? Yeah, would you do this?
Oh,
would you
fuck
do this
no.
for free?
In fact, you have to pay me twice the money you were paying
me
before.
Would you go at the evening and just prepare a completely foolproof method with, like, a video, and a pretty video with, I don't know what it takes these days to teach people things, right? Would you do that with no money? Just because, or would you, you know, because every time I hear people saying this is how you should do X on Linux, it's from their point of view, and that's fair enough.
There's two things on that, right? There's, like, I have seen, like, when you, yeah, I agree with you, the Linux community, in air quotes, is a stupid phrase, because you're dealing with so many types of people, so many different people doing so many different things. Like, it's not one unit. It's not, you can't address the Linux community as one group. It's such a ridiculous thing to say. So the Linux community doesn't exist. There's communities around projects, individual projects, and then there's maybe a higher meta community around certain ideas in software. But then, you know, the Linux community, it's a bullshit phrase.
With the risk of being controversial, I couldn't give a damn whether people run Linux or not. I really don't care. If you want to run Linux, great. Jump on the bandwagon. Do what needs to be done to be a Linux user, and it comes with stuff. You know, okay, there are your distros that you can put on and you can work away. It's possible. But if you really want to get stuck into it, you dig under the hood and you kind of make it work for you and you make it your thing, and you things break and things fix, and it's all part of the game. I don't care who runs Linux. But if you're going to run Linux, you've got to take, for me, you've got to take on the whole ecosystem around Linux and what it stands for and how it developed to where it is today. And I don't know. I don't get it. I don't know why we're trying to reach out to the world and get to the world to run Linux. For me, the world can kind of fuck off, really. I can't be bothered with it. Like, just if you want to run Linux, run Linux. If you don't want to run Linux, don't run Linux. It's that bloody simple.
I swear to God, Wayne, you're my spirit animal. You're dealing with about 2%, maybe 1%, if we're being generous, of the entire population of the planet who would give a fuck about any of this. I was thinking about this whole topic, and I think what it boils down to for me is not Linux specifically. It's any system on a computer that gives you control and that is not dictated by a private company. I think that's what it really comes down to for me, is Linux is just Linux. It's not owned by anyone. It's, you know, the custodian of Linux is the Linux Foundation, but it's not dictating, you know, it's not a corporate model. It's not a for-profit model. So it's not the same thing. But email is a prime example. Everyone uses email. Nobody owns
open
email.
Standard.
Like, it's just a technology that is implemented by different people. And that's what I see Linux as. It's just the email of operating systems. And I think that's where people misunderstand Linux. They think it's just another alternative to Windows or Mac or whatever. But it's not really. It's kind of its own separate category, as far as I'm concerned. So if you're going to equate Windows and Mac experiences to Linux experiences, it's just not the same thing. It's apples and oranges. Like, Linux is not an operating system. It is a way to do an operating system. It's a base on which to create your own operating system. So I hope I'm making sense here. But that's how I see it. Like, I think the major problem I see in the tech world is we have too many gated communities, too many closed walled gardens everywhere. And I don't think that's the way it should be. I think everything should be based on an open level playing field with open standards. Everyone's singing off the same hymn sheet. You can still have a business. You can still make money. I'm not saying you can't do that. And I'm not saying we have to go into some socialist dystopia or whatever. But, you know, let's all base it on common ground. Let's base it on common standards that we all agree on, that all make sense, that are all secure, that are all safe for everyone, etc., etc. So that's why I use Linux, because that's what I want for the world. That's my worldview. I want people to. I don't like the fact that I have to use WhatsApp because it's WhatsApp by Meta or whatever the fuck they're calling themselves, and they can go fuck themselves as far as I'm concerned. But like, or Bezos or whatever is dictating what I can use. And I'm a very opinionated, principled person. Like, I haven't used Amazon for 2 years. I'm a member of a socialist party here in Ireland. Like, I'm a very opinionated, very political person. So I take this shit very seriously. But like, that's my vision of success. You know, the whole world using common open standards that aren't owned by anyone, that aren't exploited by anyone. You know, I think you see where I'm coming from.
I kind of like the whole email analogy as well. And I suppose just with analogies and everything, the great thing is with email is no one can take it and turn it into, close it off and turn it into instant messenger only. You know, email is always going to be email. And because of the licensing of Linux, Linux is always going to be Linux. It can't be closed, unlike BSD, because it has a more permissive license. You know, everyone is going to have to contribute to Linux to make it better for everyone forever.
Not necessarily. Like, how much is MediaTek contributing to Linux? Heavy use of Linux on MediaTek processors in the form of Android mostly. And how much stuff does
MediaTek... But then you also need a reason to contribute, you know? Like, companies aren't just going to contribute or support out of the goodness of their heart. They have to have a reason to do so. And unless you get the critical mass there, unless you get all the people behind it who want what they're offering, then they're just not going to do it. NVIDIA is a prime example. Like, you heard, we've all probably seen that video of Linus Torvalds going like, oh, NVIDIA, fuck you and whatever. But like, but like, that's what it's all about. Like, you know, they go where the people will go. And that goes back to what I was saying about open standards. You need those, that common ground, that common playing field. Or else that's what you're going to get. You're just going to have to rely on the goodwill of these private corporations to support X, Y, or Z. And that's a shite model. Like, that's not good.
And that's why open hardware is so important as well as open software.
To answer the question you asked us at the beginning, Shane, the projects that I'd like to see, pushing through, I'd like to say Nextcloud, well done for hanging in there and for continually pushing out updates to a package that I think is absolutely amazing. And I use it in my daily life, and it is my Google world. I don't live really in Google world. The other one is Matrix, and Element is the other side of things, where I think, as another project that I think is just doing amazingly for their open source or their open approach to communications and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think if I had to be pressed for the answer to that question, it's not things that came out in 2021, but it's things I got to grips with in 2021 were Pipewire and KDE. After trying KDE maybe 3 or 4 times over the last 4 years, I finally think this time I get it. I do enjoy using it now. When you take the time, because I don't know, regular listeners of the podcast will know that I was going through a lot of DIY in the house. The house was a bit of in chaos. I didn't have a permanent place to put my computer and sit down and have a workspace and all that. So, but now I do. So once you start enjoying finding your workflow a bit more and you have a bit more time to think about it and spend time on it, then KDE is really nice. Down to the placement of something on the window decorations, you can change that. You know, I know you can do a lot of the stuff in GNOME too, but I don't know, in KDE it just feels more thoughtful. You know, you can go into the settings of KDE and just get hours of entertainment if you're into that kind of thing. Like, you can go, I can change this, I can change that. Oh my god, that's amazing.
You can do it 3 different ways.
I can do what? Like, I changed my alt tab behavior to be like the old school, like iTunes kind of album flow kind of thing. And I was like, oh my god, that looks so cool. I love it. And that was Mike's tip, actually. Thank you, Mike. But yeah, just things like that, like all those little nuances you can change. Funny aside, actually, I was a big fan of Pop OS. Pop OS's aesthetic, anyway, I should say. Stability wise, I had some issues with it, so I jumped ship. But always loved the look of Pop OS. It always looked really nice to me. So KDE, I just popped in all the Pop OS themes and fonts, and now it just kind of looks like Pop OSified KDE.
It is amazing.
So perfect. Pipewire was the other one. I really hope Pipewire becomes more mature and takes hold, because it's light years ahead of Pulse Audio or Alsa or whatever else, and even Jack. Like the way it stands in for Jack is just beautiful. I did have some issues with it with Ardor, so I had to go back to the old way of things. But yeah, I really hope Pipewire takes off in a big way.
There's hope, Shane. I mean, I'm running, as I said, Fedora Silverblue, so that has Pipewire built in, came with it. And recently, for the last three episodes, turn the computer on, plug all the interfaces and the microphone and everything in it, turn on Audacity, turn on OBS, press record, and it all does it. Exactly. I haven't seen this
zero
before,
issues. Right? It just happens.
I haven't, that's not something I've achieved. I mean, that's great. Like, I don't remember ever having this kind of I can just start a podcast, I can just turn up for the podcast 2 minutes before we start recording, and it's actually going to work. Hey, that's fantastic.
How did we put up with how bad it was for so long, like in terms of audio on Linux?
Because we love it.
I know, right? That was always the one thing about Linux. I was like, audio is fucking terrible. And I really hope I was so surprised that it took so long for Pipewire to happen, you know, because I thought other people would be bashing their heads against the wall just.
Yeah, you don't want to record Linux podcasts from Windows, but well, if you have to, you have to, because, and that just says a lot about Linux audio. Yeah,
I think Connor had to do that once or twice.
Yeah, I had to do that with a previous audio interface.
No, I'm only messing.
Well, if it just doesn't work with your hardware, then you're screwed. Like, it's just that. I go first. I'm gonna just say my favorite project that really came into their own this year, same as Wayne's, Nextcloud and Element and Matrix. I'm running I'm one of the people running the Nextcloud and the Matrix servers for the Dublin Linux community, and it just works. It's fantastic what they can do. And Nextcloud is coming. Nextcloud seems to be getting a lot of adoption from like organizations and stuff. So, and they are doing a lot of activism as well. So great projects. I hope they just thrive and more of the same, please.
For me, I put in the wine as a shout out because of the light of going back to the Steam Deck. Hey, it's all connected. So in the light of all the development that's been going on in Proton, sure, there's the Valve money coming in on one side, but there's also it's all of this would not be possible without wine. So they basically said, oh, so you guys have been doing this for the last 15, 20 years, how long wine has been around, and Valve came in and said, oh, we're suddenly going to come in, we're going to swoop in and take all of the effort that you've did in, and we're going to improve upon it. But like, yeah, but without the pre-existing project. So those guys deserve a shout out. It seems to be that the Mozilla Foundation is constantly in need of a shout out these days. I mean, was it that
some of that's kind of their own fault, let's face it.
their last statistic was, what was it? They're over 90% funded by Google. So a bit of diversification on revenue there, guys. So I think that I can't remember who set this up, but it was the Software in the Public Interest, which unfortunately, I think they're US only, but it seems to be a very worthwhile organization to give a shout out to. And of course, donation links will be in the show notes for all of these.
Yeah, I mean, considering what we have been talking about in terms of open software and open standards and everything, I would really like to give a shout out for the GNU Linux Open Hardware PowerPC Notebook. I mean, these guys have been at it now for at least 3 years, maybe more, creating open hardware. They have working prototypes now. They need more funding, and they're getting there slowly but surely. And I love the fact that they're still knocking away at it, you know. And there's some really good presentations that the guys have made on what they're doing, and I'm really looking forward to having an open PowerPC laptop to use with the Linux distribution of my choice sitting on top of it. You know, it's going to be fantastic. And it's that kind of stuff that is going to make the dream come true.
Very, very much so. And in these same vein, probably the RISC-V, that they're open hardware as well. So it's all good having different ideas around the problem of having more open hardware.
How does it stack up, PowerPC and RISC-V? I know nothing about the PowerPC platform, apart from it that it used to be what Macs used to run on 20 years.
Yeah, well, if you think of it, Mike, I mean, like the PowerPC specification came from IBM, and, you know, it's a lot more recent than x86, you know? And it was built by experienced engineers, or put together by experienced engineers based on what was best in everything that came before. So, you know, you're getting proper modern hardware in an open design. I mean, this is going to be great. Guys, we have to donate to this project. Yeah,
I might throw a few quid towards that myself.
We will, as Gunnar said, we will put the donation links into the show notes.
PowerPC is an interesting architecture as well. I don't know much about it, but what I've heard about it sounds very interesting. So yeah, check that out. Who else has one? Wayne, I believe you have one in there.
It's not so much this. I don't know. Considering all the things we were talking about and all the cages that we rattled and stuff, this is just a kind of a project I was working on myself. Again, it's more to do with it's nothing to do with me. I followed some great developers' work on the internet, and this is just the Squishbox look. I don't know if any of you guys, I know you don't like putting it's a kind of a guitar pedal that's a keyboard, and it's a Raspberry Pi in there, and I know we're talking about audio. I know you do the editing, Shane, so you can wave all this stuff out with massive reverb and everything. It's worth a look. I'll put it in there. It's called a Squishbox. It'll turn any MIDI keyboard into a device that plays open sound font formats, and it's easily repairable, and you build it yourself, you fix it yourself, you're involved in the entire process of bringing it to fruition and to its and using it for any sounds you want to use, all SF2 format sounds.
I was looking at this before we started recording. I actually picked up an electric guitar myself a few months ago. I've been learning guitar there for the past while. I'm still shite, don't worry. But can it also be used as an actual guitar pedal?
You can put, well, it is an actual guitar pedal, but it's for, you have to route MIDI data through it. So you'd plug a MIDI keyboard into it, or MIDI devices. If you had a MIDI guitar, I mean, that would work through it, but yeah.
Mm. That's amazing. Yeah, I was looking at that project before we went on, and it looks very, very interesting. Like, yeah, because that's lovely. That's what I've been looking for something like that you can, something hackable you can build yourself, and you can just plug your MIDI keyboard into it. And
it's that kind of world.
Would you have like a MIDI guitar? Would you have like the?
You can have them. You can have them.
Yeah, I've seen
a keytar. It's called.
Oh god, there was when I was a kid, there was this one guy in the hit parades, as we called the charts back then, and that was cheese, super cheese.
It's easily done.
Glossy business jacket, imagine that.
It's all there for the taking, Mike.
That was a hell of a time. Mike, I believe you had a shout out as well.
I've agreed with Vane's, because you know there's so much good stuff happening. Okay, so I could go Fedora, I could go Endeavor OS, using both distributions. Any of the ones that you guys mentioned, perfect. But I don't want to make Connor any more later for his dinner.
Thank you.
If he's turkey and ham.
So I think that's a natural breaking point.
I'll Not quite yet. I think it's a good opportunity for me to give the shout out of my idea for the gaming session. So I have an idea that I gave a shout out on the previous podcast as well. But on the 27th of December, which is a bank holiday here, I can't speak for anywhere else in the world, but 7:30 Dublin time, and there'll be a link to convert it into US time. How about a free and open source gaming night? I decided to make it free and open source because could have put it as a Steam game or something like that, but some people have objections to Steam, which is again, there's no judgment in that whatsoever. So in order to not excludes the people who have objections to Steam, why not make it a nice social night of free and open source gaming? I'm open to suggestions, but the ones that I have here are Zero K, which is a real-time strategy game, Open Tux Kart, if you're familiar with Mario Kart, it's a very similar idea, and Zonotic, which is your Unreal Tournament type of game. Of late, I've been also playing a bit of Warsaw, is it? Which is very similar to Zonotic. So again, these are all ideas. It will probably depend on who turns up on the day, how many people turn up, what people are feeling like on the day. So all of this could be up in the air. All of this could be academic. But if anyone has their own personal suggestions, feel free to contact us on the on our Matrix, on our Telegram, or on our email. All of the details will be in the show notes, or there is ways to contact us listed on our website as well if you want details on how to contact us. But yeah, it should be a nice over the festive period get together.
Yeah, so you can get all the details at linuxlads.com/contact. We're on Telegram, Matrix, those are bridged together, Twitter, not Facebook, not Instagram, not Snapchat, not TikTok.
Was the other one not OnlyFans?
No, we're on OnlyFans, yeah.
For just the price of a coffee a day.
You can sponsor a poor Linux podcaster. So yeah, as I've said before on the podcast, we don't do this for money or fame or anything like that. We just do it for the love of it and just getting together and talking about Linux once every some amount of weeks.
Unspecified.
We have a truly terrible release schedule that would never fly if we were actually being paid to do this. So yeah. If you want to donate any money, just go to linuxlads.com/donate. There'll also be a link to go to Ko-fi or Ko-fi. And then you can also buy a mug or a t-shirt from linuxlads.com/store. So all that's greatly appreciated. So yeah, we're approaching the end. Mark and Wayne, would you guys like to let anybody know where they can contact you or what you're up to?
No.
Well, that's concise.
We're uncontactable, I'm afraid. I think we are pretty much anyway these days.
And I think you prefer it that way. As well.
I think I've come to that way of thinking. Yeah, I've come to that way of thinking. I do want to say thanks for having us on and pulling us out of our dungeons and. And I'm really looking forward to hearing.
Yeah,
you didn't even ask. You didn't even ask. Was the weather like in Bristol right now?
Before we started the show, I had to pretend that we were all on, and I did actually speak about the weather.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Alrighty. So, thanks everyone.
We do still occasionally read info at thebinarytimes.net, but only occasionally. Don't expect a quick response.
Thanks both of you for coming along and coming out of retirement for one last bout. It was one last bout last year as well, though, I guess, wasn't it?
It's perpetually one last bout.
So yeah, thanks everyone for joining us. Have a happy Christmas and a happy new year and all that, or a happy whatever you celebrate at this time of year, and we will see you in January. Goodbye.
Allegedly. Bye-bye.
Probably.
See ya.
Bye.